This episode of the Bayou Dragons podcast is proudly brought to you by Dragon Industrial Wrap.
Fuse. Ready for any project, no matter how big or how small. Dragon Industrial Wrap.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 51 of the Bayou Dragons podcast. Today we are joined by my little brother Matthew, and we have one of my good buddies. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, Mr. Andrew Austin, also known as Swamp Seeker.
Hell yeah. Happy to be back.
We'd like to welcome you to the show today. And I hollered at Andrew. What was it today? Was it today?
Yep.
I was like, man, let's do a podcast. I know you just went on that badass trip. And Andrew went, he traveled to the Amazons and did a really cool trip. I wanted to have him on and talk about it a little bit and kind of pick his brain on it and, you know, talk a little bit about his experience.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, you went to the Amazon jungle. Amazon forest, not the new super Amazon center they just built in Mexico.
Yeah, I went to Amazonia. That's what I like to call it.
Hell yeah.
Amazonia, Amazon jungle. That's it.
So you've been wanting to take this trip for quite a while, huh?
Yeah, and I remember, I think on the first episode or second episode I was on, y'all were asking me about Belize. And Belize was amazing. That's the Central American jungle. You know, that's rainforest, it's wild, it's pretty badass in its own right. But I remember mentioning on there, I think I specifically said, you know, it was awesome, but it's not the Amazon. It's kind of like a step below the Amazon. You know, you work your way up. The Amazon is the ultimate place for adventure in the world, for outdoorsmen and naturalists and just people that want to experience, you know, planet Earth in its purest form. And so, yeah, I finally went to the actual Amazon, and it was everything I thought it would be.
So what do you mean by that when you say that it's not the Amazon? What's the divider there? Like, what makes the Amazon a tier up? Is it the biodiversity? Is it the scale, the size? Like,
everything, yeah, things. It's you know, Central America has some really wild places left, but, it you know, there aren't uncontacted tribes, you know, there aren't, like, basically all those areas have been explored. There are parts of the Amazon that, you know, white people have never been to. Europeans have never been to. There's people there that I've never seen a white person. There's uncontacted tribes in the Amazon, deep in the Amazon, that have been living the same way for thousands of years. You know, these Native Americans that have been living the same way for thousands of years, and they don't know the modern world. They're still living primitive lifestyles, which is just really plays on the, you know, the imagination. And, you know, the Amazon region is huge. You know, it's based off of the you know, around the Amazon River, which, you know, has its headwaters in the Andes Mountains. And it, you know, it's this massive, massive area that would take up like half the United States. And it's pure jungle, as far as you can see. You know, it's unbroken jungle, you know, very, very little human influence. Now, there are areas on the outskirts and some areas closer into the interior that are starting to get logged out. A lot of those countries that are that have parts of the Amazon in them, you know, they have one of the most incredible natural resources in the world. And a lot of them want to, you know, they want to use their timber resources and the gold. There's a lot of gold mining and all these different resources out there. And they want to use them to, you know, build their economies and get out of, you know, the kind of the developing countries that they're in become more developed. But most of the Amazon remains untouched and completely wild, which is pretty wild to me.
So basically, you went on this trip to experience all these things that you've been, you know, wanting to do your whole life or a big part of your life.
Yeah, for most people like me that grow up kind of interested in wildlife and, you know, grew up watching, like, you know, Steve Irwin and, like, you know, Nat Geo and Animal Planet Discovery, you quickly realize that, like, the Amazon jungle is kind of the top tier of places to go in your lifetime. It's like a thing on the bucket list that you have to check off. And, so yeah, it's something I've thought about for a long time. Wasn't always certain I would ever make it there. I thought it was a lot more difficult to go.
I mean, how do you even go about, like, say, like, I wanted to go,
it's so
plan
easy.
A trip,
yeah,
to go?
It's so easy. There's you know, there's guides that take you deep into the Amazon. I was kind of towards the outskirts of the Amazon. I'd still like to go back and do a trip into Brazil, like into the heart of the Amazon. I was kind of on the outside of it, and this country that a lot of people haven't even heard of called Suriname. It was a Dutch colony, and now it's got its independence, but it's still got a lot of Dutch people. It's got a lot of Africans, a lot of different you know, Asian cultures there and Native American cultures. And Suriname's kind of unique. It's got like mountains and stuff. But someday I'd like to go to Peru and go to the areas where there's still uncontacted tribes. And not that you would ever want to, you know, contact those people because it's dangerous for them and you. But I want to go deeper in next time.
So I do have a question about the non-contacted tribes or whatever. So you said you went on like a guided deal, like you found a guide and they brought you to all these places. So do these guides know where the tribes are that are uncontacted?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Suriname definitely has tribes that haven't modernized and still live isolated. And we were actually supposed to stay in a Native American village, but there's a really bad drought right now, and we ended up, you know, not going there. But there are a couple tribes that you can actually go stay with that, you know, are very accepting of the modern world, and you know, they offer their village to people that want to come, you know, experience the jungle. But yeah, the, you know, most people you go with, they know what areas to avoid.
I wonder if they're like they can be like aggressive, those tribes that are like non-contacted. Like if you were to like come upon their village, if they'd like attack you.
Yeah. There's a guy named Paul Rosalie that was on the Rogan podcast who has done some like solo trips into Peru. He's really involved with some different organizations in Peru, you know, out there exploring the jungle and conserving different parts of the Amazon, the Peruvian Amazon. Highly recommend listening to Paul Rosalie on the Rogan podcast. He talks all about his experiences in an area called Madre de Dios. And he's done trips into the Amazon alone, and he's told stories of going down the river and just seeing a human being down the river. And like, I want to say, I can't, you have to go back and listen, but I want to say like, they've like shot like arrows at him.
I want to say, I think I've seen clips of that.
I may be thinking of Teddy Roosevelt did some adventures through the Amazon. And he definitely had arrows flying at him back in the day from uncontacted, just from, you know, native peoples living out there that they see a white person. They think you're like, you know,
an alien. Yeah. That's crazy shit. If you think about it though, these people have lived in the jungle like for however long,
thousands of years,
and they've never seen like.
Well, I wonder what like, so say a tribesman, you know, comes across a white person, and then, you know, that tribe doesn't see him for years and years, and then maybe that gets passed down. I wonder what the speculation is that we are to them. You know, what they say amongst themselves.
They have their own language and shit,
too. There's definitely a lot of lore.
Yeah. I'm sure, like, we could be the boogeyman, you know, as far as they're concerned, and that's just what they've speculated about, you know, the outsiders, you know? So you never know. I mean,
it's interesting for me because, you know, my ancestors were, you know, native to Texas, and, you know, back in the day, they were probably treated like they're probably thought of very similarly as we now think of the uncontacted.
The propaganda, you know. Yeah.
They're probably really wary of white people, and it's just interesting to think about. Like, we think of these uncontacted tribes as being super unique, but basically all the tribes from South America, Central America, North America all had a similar experience. As Europeans started, you know, coming over, it's just the fact remains that the Amazon was not an area that could be settled by Europeans. So you have people still living there like they have for thousands of years, which is really interesting. But yeah, someday I'd like to go deeper in. I think this trip to Suriname was kind of
a good entry trip.
It was, and it really opened my eyes to South America. South America is an amazing continent. There's not just jungle there. You can go to Argentina, hunt ducks. Some of the best duck hunting in the world.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Is in South America. there's grasslands, there's mountains, beautiful rivers, and
speaking of incredible place. I've always heard it's awesome place to go to Argentina to dove hunt or to duck hunt. How are the, like, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, like the regulations on hunting over there?
I don't know. I know it's a lot different. I've talked to Ramsey Russell before, and he, you know, does all his hunts down there, and I know the limits are pretty pretty nice. I think it's like 20 ducks a person.
Well, they have a shitload of birds there too.
So. Yeah, there's way
fewer
hunters.
Not many hunters.
Yeah, fewer hunters. More wetlands, bigger wetlands, just so many ducks. Hunting down there would be like hunting North America, you know, 200 years ago.
And are there any waterfowl species in the Amazon rainforest?
It's like, can you disappointing. Imagine? I know in Suriname, there, as far as I know, there's not as there's maybe like one duck species.
Yeah, I was just that little. I was out on the bayou the other day. I was telling you, and I'm sitting there watching the wood ducks come back to roost, and I was like, it's thinking about like imagine being in the jungle and just hearing wood ducks coming in.
Going to the Amazon did to me too. It helped me appreciate where we live. We live in a very wild place, man. Like, it's, you know, the landscape has changed here, but we still have, you know, our swamps and a lot of wetlands. There's a lot of similarities between where we live and the Amazon. You know, it's not near as wild, but, like, we live in a pretty, pretty wild place, especially, you know, like, if we would have been here 200 years ago, we probably would have felt the same way here as you would if you went to the Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, our swamps and our woods, and we'd have felt like we were in the jungle.
Yeah. Not a lot of people.
Jaguars and, like, I was down there and you know, there's a lot of cats down there, a lot of native cats. They have jaguar, you know, they have mountain lion, ocelot, jaguarundi, margays. What else they got down there? I think that's it. But pretty much all of those cats I just mentioned, except for one, used to be found in Texas.
Yeah.
Jaguar used to be found here, ocelot, jaguarundi.
I'd shit if I saw a jaguar now here in Texas. Yeah.
A lot of the wildlife that is found down there, a lot of the birds I saw, not a lot of the birds, some of the birds I saw are also found here in Texas. There's at least one species of snake that's found both here and in Suriname. Like, there's a lot more connection, you know, than you would think. And it's, you know, thousands of miles, or it's a long ways away, however far it is.
As the crow flies.
It's far. It was a six to eight hour plane ride there. That was scarier to me than actually being in the jungle. I hate flying.
You don't fly a lot? I remember there was like, I flew for the first time when I was like 18 for work. And then after that, I flew a ton. And now it's just like it's convenient to be able to get from A to B quickly. But yeah. I hate the whole process. I don't like flying. I'm scared to fly at first because it's plane.
I'm not a big fan of it either.
I mean, I flew a lot when I was a kid, but it was like from Dallas to Houston. It was short and sweet, but like anything over 4 hours.
Sketchy, man.
Fucking,
I tell you, that Sturgill, man, he's on a plane, seemed like every other day.
Sturgill. Sturgill is, man.
Yeah. Sucker gets around.
So when you took this trip, man, so did you like, you found a guide and you were like, hey, man, did you get to catch anything yourself? Like you tell them, hey, man, I want to catch some stuff.
Or? Yeah. So I went with a group. I have a buddy who organizes these trips around the world. He does trips to Africa. He's going to do a trip to China. He's done it. I think he's done India, you know, different places in South America. He does these expeditions and he basically hooks you up with a local guide service. So we got linked up with my buddy. His name is Ian Breland. He's been on my podcast before. He's done a lot of work with like Paul Rosalie and some of the, you know, top conservationists in Peru. Really good person I know for that kind of stuff. But he organized this trip to Suriname, and we were with a company called Unlock Nature. This guy Dick Locke, he's a Dutch dude that lives in Suriname. He started Unlock Nature and Herping Suriname, two different, or the same company, but different entities within the company.
Some of our listeners may not know.
Herping is hunting is the pursuit of an animal to hunt, to kill it, to eat it. Herping is pursuit of a reptile or an amphibian just to take photos. So you have herpetology, the study of reptiles and amphibians. Herping is, you know, going out It's like birding, but for, you know, for snakes. So yeah, we were with Herping Suriname, and it was 10 full days in the jungle, going to different places, looking for different species. And I think we ended up with 83 snakes, spanning like something like 40 or 50 species. So it was very good.
Hell yeah. So you got to herp a lot and catch some snakes.
Any venomous, any hots?
Yeah, we, so our main targets were anaconda. That's, you know, a lot of people, when they think of the Amazon, they think of the green anaconda, heaviest snake in the world. You know, they can reach, you know, 18 feet plus, you know, weigh a couple hundred pounds. Big, intimidating snakes. You know, there's a lot of lore surrounding them, but they're not like particularly dangerous to humans. I'm sure there have been people that have been eaten by anacondas, but it's not like an immediate threat. We ended up finding
anacondas are non-venomous, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're big constrictors. But you don't want to get bit by a large adult because, you know, the teeth are so big and the bacteria. We ended up finding three anacondas. Some of our other targets were the emerald palm viper, which is pretty toxic. And the big one, which is the largest, it's the longest viper in the world, is the Bushmaster. It's just basically a codmouth on steroids. You know, they get massive.
And y'all caught one?
Yeah, we did get one. My very first snake. This is a snake that people will spend their entire lives looking for in South America. It was my very first snake in South America.
That's how it would go, you know?
But, you know, that's kind of the benefit of going with a guide. And, you know, I have mixed emotions about doing anything guided. You know, guided hunts, guided fishing trips, guided herping.
Well, there's different levels to it, right?
It's great because, you know, if you go to South America as an outsider, as a foreigner, you know, you're not going to be able to, like, learn enough to find the species you want to see in a short time frame. So going with a guide, you're able to, you know, expedite that.
Well, there's also tiers to the level of guiding, I think, because when you're talking about, and almost you can't speak about that type of guiding in the same breath as like a guided trip, right? I'm throwing my fingers up, where, you know, somebody would pay a stupid amount of money and they'd walk you over, and somebody would turn out a 400-inch deer with a tag in its ear, you know, let somebody would, you know, some real high roller would let their kid shoot it, or they'd shoot it, or whatever. That's just different. You know what I mean? You're going to a wild place.
Yeah. Yeah. Point taken. I think the, even like guiding in a more ethical way, I guess you could say, guiding in general, it takes away the charm of failing and then succeeding and learning and like being out in the field and then finding success on your own. That, like, that's such a big part of hunting and fishing and everything else for me.
I think to that point, though, you do have to have, like, for a guy like me, like, I've definitely over the past couple of years now appreciate somebody that offers that kind of service, because my time has become so much more valuable. Yeah. I have so much less of it now, you know, having started a family and having to work to make up for different financial things and, you know, just keep the ball rolling. You know, my time is, like, super important to me. So to be able to go out and fail and do all of that takes time, you know. Yeah. It takes
– I definitely still go on guided trips. Yeah. It just – my main point is it doesn't quite have the charm as going out alone.
I 100% agree. Yeah. But there is
– But I go on guided trips, yeah.
There's a place for the guides.
And I like supporting my friends that are guides. And like, guiding in general is really good. But, like, for herping, you know – it's kind of the same thing, I guess, but, you know, it shouldn't be the case that my first snake was a Bushmaster in you know, that's like one of the top tier snakes that you got to earn.
I do have a question about the Amazon. So say you're out deep in the Amazons and you find this, what was it called?
Bushmaster.
You find a Bushmaster, you catch it and it strikes you, injects you with venom or whatever, you get bit. What happens in that situation? You're out in the middle of the jungle. You just got bit by a highly venomous snake. What do you do?
Man, I wouldn't be that worried, honestly, because the guys I was with, they would have taken care of me. I'm sure they got protocols. And I mean, it definitely would not be ideal. Like, a Bushmaster can certainly kill you.
But just anything, like, extremely venomous, yeah. bite you out there.
Well, the more likely situation is you get hit by a fertilance. I think it kills more people than any other species in Latin America, Central and South America. They get pretty big. They're about twice as toxic as a cottonmouth, and they're everywhere. I think we would see multiple a night. Our guide, he actually stepped on one night.
Is it ant?
Fertilance?
Fertile ant.
Fertilance. Yeah, fertilance.
Okay. It's a snake.
They have different names. Terciopelo, fertilance. Down in Suriname, the local name for them is Labadia. So yeah, different areas, they have different names. They're in the Bothrops genus, which is basically just like cottonmouths and copperheads on steroids. They're very similar.
Bushmaster.
That's the Bushmaster, yeah.
It's a mean looking deer.
Longest venomous snake in the world.
I don't know. You tell me, is that a forced perspective or is that?
That's a big snake.
Yeah.
It's the longest pit viper in the world, my bad.
That's a big dude, man.
Yeah, it's an amazing animal. But the fertilances, they're a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. And one night, our guide, he went to take a piss and he turned his light off briefly and took like two steps. He felt something wiggling, under his boot. And there was a fertilance under his boot.
Highly venomous.
Highly venomous. Like, it can kill you easily. I would not want to get hit by one. And actually, the guides, they will not let you go out into the jungle without boots on, without rubber boots.
You got to have boots?
Any boots. I mean, rubber boots in general are going to keep you, 80% safe.
Yeah.
They're not like the, quite as good as the snake boots, but. Yeah. Like, I stuck my lacrosse boots in my bag.
Yeah, you were good to go.
And I think I might be the only person that's ever worn lacrosse boots in the Amazon.
Surely not, right?
I mean, I would hope not, but they're the superior jungle boot, dude. They're, like, most people had boots that only came up, like, mid-calf.
You're talking about, like, your lacrosse knee boots?
Yeah, yeah.
With the cinch on the side?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, most people had boots, cheap little rubber boots that came up, like, mid-calf. And, like, a fertilance that's 8 feet long could strike right over them. So I was like, fuck that. I'm not buying boots down there. I'm packing my lacrosse boots. And, they're above the knee and you can cinch them. So, spiders and shit can't get in there. And
another thing you got to worry about too, huh? Spiders there?
And I don't know. I think one of the most venomous spiders in the world. What's it called? It's like a wolf spider, but it's a lot bigger. And it can kill you, but like it's not. You'd have to have one in your boot and you stick your foot in like without socks on for it to get you.
Yeah, so it's not just one of those, yeah. Oh, I got one on me.
What's that spider called? It hit me.
I don't know, man. Like,
there's so much on my mind.
It sounds like really badass, the experience and everything, but that's probably not the place for me. Just because I really don't fuck with snakes. Like, I appreciate what they do.
Yeah.
But I don't really fuck with them very much.
I don't know, man. It seems, before I went down there, I thought I was going to be uncomfortable. I thought I was going to be unsafe. I thought I was going to be worried about, disease and bugs and all this stuff. It was pretty mild. Like, I could hype it up like it was this, crazy, dangerous adventure. But honestly, the only danger I was in at any moment was I was killing these fish called Adimata. There's like these big, like a giant bowfin or something. They're in this like little puddle, that stream that they were in, dried up. And I was slinging this machete through there, killing these fish we're going to eat. And a like 4 foot electric eel came swimming out.
No shit.
And they could kill you.
But that's like that one, huge curveball right there.
Yeah, that's a giant curveball.
That's the only danger I was in.
I'm in snake and reptile and spider lane over here, and you throw out electric eel.
What
that's just
if
a
one
complete
of those
curveball.
Get you? What happens if one of those gets you?
I think
how
if you take a full
you?
Volt,
yeah, so how do they get you?
You just touch them, and they
contact.
Shock the shit out of you.
You're dead.
I don't know what kind of volts they
taking
produce.
Taking a taser.
Let's Google this.
It's like throwing a breaker and just 480.
Dude, I'm glad we don't have electric eels in Southeast
Texas.
Too.
Well, this one we did one night of just walking this river. And the guides were like, all we have to worry about is electric eels. I'm good. All we have to worry about is electric eels. We don't have to worry about stingrays. There's freshwater stingrays out there.
Yeah. And so thanks, Jeremy Wade, for letting me know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, we prefer to deal with an electric eel than the stingrays, or they were happy about that because, you know, the stingrays can...
Is that more of like a...
fuck you up, too.
Like an ignorance thing as far as... Not ignorance in the sense of, like, you're stupid, but in the sense that, like, you don't know it's there. You know, like, maybe you step on one and it just...
Yeah, the water's murky. Yeah, you just... Yeah. But the electric eel can produce up to 600 volts.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That so just touching power. One, and are they always producing that charge?
Yeah, like, they just...
They're just charged
all
up.
The time. They're just, you know, a ticking little electric time bomb. And we, you know, we spent a lot of time in the water. And so it's kind of wild to think I could have just, like, hit one and...
You could have bumped into one.
Did y'all have any...
I don't know if it kills you. I think people that die from them, usually they get hit and it knocks, like, it knocks them unconscious and they drown.
I wonder what lightning strike survivors, you know, what kind of electricity they were hit with. The ones that lived, you know what I mean?
I don't have any intuition about electricity. I don't even, like, 600 volts sounds like a lot.
Yeah, but how? Like, you can't fathom it, you know?
What is, like, the threshold of what a human can handle? I don't.
I know I've got some I&E guys that I work with that might listen to this, and they could probably tell you. Yeah, they'll be in the comment section later.
Yeah, yeah.
It just sounds like the Amazons just has a bunch of shit out there that wants to, or that can kill you.
It can, yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, there's electric eels, there's... highly venomous snakes, but, you know, I wore my knee boots, and I wasn't really worried. You know, I kind of kept my wits about me in the water. There's one moment I got, like, every time we'd find a critter, I would always be the one, like, left behind. Usually someone would stay behind with me. Sometimes everybody would leave, and I'd be, you know, way behind the group taking pictures or whatever. And I was taking a picture of this, it's called a gladiator tree frog. It's a tree frog that gets about, like, that long. It's fucking huge,
like half a foot.
Yeah It's like a 6-inch long, like, fucking tree frog, and it digs up a hole in the sand of the bank on the river. It's like, it digs an arena, and that's where it like attracts a female, and they, you know, they reproduce there. And I was photographing one, and I put all my shit up, and I started walking. Everybody else was like 200 yards away, so I was in the river, you know, up to my chest, have my camera bag above my head.
You brought your Nikon?
Yeah, I brought all my expensive shit. No, so I have it above my head, and I'm fucking walking through this river. And, you know, it sounds crazy. Like, it sounds wild and scary, but it was a very serene moment. I turned my headlight off, and I just traversed by moonlight. And
that's crazy.
It felt fucking amazing, dude. Like, yeah. I felt like I was in the wildest place. That was honestly... I was there to see all the snakes and all this wildlife, you know, like monkeys, all sorts of monkeys and birds and all this shit, caiman. But that one experience stood out so much to me. Just, you know, walking, wading through this river.
What does it sound like out there? Like, you hear water.
So much noise. There's so much life, dude.
Just
so much life.
Everything's alive at all times.
The background noise, the main background noise you hear is howler monkeys. It sounds like... I think they're the loudest mammal in the world, so you can hear them from miles away. But it sounds like King Kong's about to jump out. Mm-hmm. That's what they sound like.
That's crazy.
I don't know.
That's scary. Yeah, I'd be terrified.
Sometimes I can do a howler call. It's like a deep growl.
I'd like to hear what they sound like.
I mean, it depends on if my voice cracks or not.
Ooh.
That's what it sounds
like. That's what they sound like?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, but it's loud as
shit. They hold that for...
And it echoes through the forest for miles.
Jeez.
So it sounds very eerie, but it's fucking cool, though. You know, you learn to love it.
Do you have? Is there a shift in different sounds you hear, like daytime versus nocturnal stuff? And
so the...
But
the,
it's always... There's always
the howlers,
something.
They call, you know, some of the daytime, mostly at dusk and dawn at night. And those are more red howlers. When I was in Belize, they had black... howlers, two different species. The howler monkeys are, you know, usually in the background. You can hear them. There's all sorts of birds that are calling. Some of them sound like you can't imagine what they look like by the noise they're making. They're just so exotic sounding. Lots of insects calling, frogs, there's just a buzz of life in the jungle.
But the density of the just everything.
Oh,
animals and insects, like that was almost very bad.
Yeah,
almost just spilled a lot of stuff here, but we're okay. We made it.
We're good.
But yeah, we had to take a quick break, but we are back now, talking with Andrew a little bit about the Amazons and how alive that shit is at night and at daytime too. Yep.
It's a wild place. I recommend going there if you have an interest in adventure and wildlife and or fishing. It's a big destination for fishing.
What kind of fish can you catch over there?
I didn't get a chance to fish for them, but that's where peacock bass are native.
I see these videos all the time pop up on my feed, and it's these dudes, and it looks like they're in the Amazons, and they're throwing these extremely aggressive topwater baits.
Oh, yeah.
And huge. These massive fish are just smashing the bait. I don't even know what kind of fish they are, but it looks badass.
It's probably peacock bass. And Suriname, the kind of the staple trophy fish in freshwater is it's called the Adimata. It's like this, it's got huge teeth that get massive, like, 30, 40 pounds, maybe bigger. I don't know. I know they get big. They kind of remind me of a bowfin or a grinnell like we have here,
mm-hmm.
Like very prehistoric looking. They can, survive in kind of low oxygenated water, low oxygen situations, like swamps and stuff. And one of the guys told me that he knows this guy that travels the world, fishing for different species and chasing all these trophy fish in fresh water. And he said the Adimata is the most intense topwater fishing he's ever done. And all his experiences traveling the world. So I definitely, next time I go, I'm going to try to do like 2 or 3 days of fishing.
You didn't get to do any fishing Adimata.
I brought a rod. I packed a rod and reel. When I got down there, I bought a couple topwaters. But the river was so low when I went. All the pools that I was fishing, they had already been fished out by the Maroons. The Maroons are these African tribes that live there. They escaped during the slave days down there, and they live, they live in tribal structures, and they live off the land, just like the Native Americans down there. And they had already caught all the fish. Like, there was not a single fish left in all the pools. You'd have to walk for miles down the river to get to find Adimata that hadn't been caught. But one night we did, we went to a different location, and there was this little stream that had a couple pools left, and the Adimata were just, I had mentioned them earlier when I encountered that electric eel, that they were stacked in these pools, and some of them had already died and been eaten, but there were a bunch left, and the guides, they just handed me a machete and was like, all right, go get them. So I just was down there whacking Adimata one after another.
Dude, that reminds me, when you said about prehistoric fish, we had alligator gar here in a pond that dried up just down the road. Me and Brandon Fox went down there, and I mean, it couldn't have been more than 10 feet, 10 foot circle full of water, but you could just see it broke over everywhere. There was probably 30 fish in there. Yeah. See their backs breaking over. We did the same thing, except we didn't chop them. We just grabbed them and threw them, chunked them out of the water.
You ate these fish. They were pretty good.
Oh, they're really good.
What would you compare them to?
I don't even know that. The flakes of meat were pretty big. They're pretty big fish. Some of them were,
I'm going to have to look up a picture of these fuckers because I don't know what they look like.
I'll Jamie it for you right now.
They're also called a wolf fish. If you type in wolf fish, they'll come up. I don't even know. They're just a pretty clean white meat. Now, some of the people in our group did not want to eat them because the pool that they were in was full of dead fish.
Yeah.
It was rotten. The first one I hit, water sprayed into my mouth. I was like, I'm about to fucking die from this. This is going to take me out. I had a big ass dip in. I was like, maybe the nicotine, the tobacco.
Big pinch of cougar.
Is that
big
right?
Big pinch
is
of
that
cougar. It? Yeah. Well, no, that's different.
Okay. I'm going to
type
sure
in Aimara. Adimata. It should come up.
I've never even heard of that species of fish.
I hadn't either. It's some random, it's a Suriname thing.
How'd they cook them?
They just fried them.
Fried them.
We got back to the.
Okay, here we go.
We're staying on this little river, and there were some Maroons there that lived there, and They were our chefs, and they took care of us and stuff. And we showed up at like 3 a.m. and yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's the Nighty Mata.
What does that look like? Let me see that up close.
That's dude, a pretty. Really that's pretty a big unique. One. That's a real big.
Well, let
one.
Me see a. That's a big scale. A yeah. normal size or.
I didn't see any of that size. They catch them on top.
That's a big son bitch. Yeah, I think this is what I was seeing. They hit top water.
Yeah.
I guarantee the videos I've been seeing, they're hitting these.
Yeah, it's funny. You also, say
there's arapaima that people fish for too, which are pretty prehistoric.
That's a big ass fish, right?
They have that, huge teeth.
So that's bigger than that's probably bigger than what you'd see.
Yeah, I didn't get to see any that big, but. The tribe that we were kind of staying with, they were really excited, and we showed up at like 3 a.m. and they all hopped out of their hammocks to come see the haul.
That was pretty cool. That's of pretty those, cool. Of man. Those fish?
Yeah,
those
because we had a cooler full.
That's crazy.
How big were the ones y'all were catching?
The probably the biggest one I caught was like 30 inches or so.
Oh, that's still a big ass fish.
Yeah, it was big. It was like, I just whacked it in the head and threw it on the bank, but you'll see the pictures I took with it. I'm holding it by the eyeballs because, like, I was gonna, gill it or,
you're holding it by the eyes
because the guys told me their gills and their like if you try to lip them, like you'll shred your hands up.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you up real bad.
And they said the proper way to hold it is by the fucking eyeballs.
So their gill plates are real sharp like that too.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, because I saw the teeth, so I was like, oh, I'll just hold it, in the gills, and they said don't do that either.
You don't want to get
cut up. So yeah, the picture's really awkward. I'm holding like a machete, and I'm fucking my fingers are dug into the fucking eye sockets of this thing.
That's badass.
But it was cool.
Yeah, I'd like to go down there, and I said earlier that I wouldn't want to go down there, but fishing down there sounds pretty cool.
There's pretty nice like fishing charters down there where you get down there, you fly into Peru or Brazil, they'll pick you up at the airport. They'll bring you out to, the river, and they'll boat you down to like a really nice lodge, and they got, they cook your meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You're staying in a, you're probably going to be sleeping in a hammock. But yeah, they'll take you out and catch whatever you want. It doesn't have to be as crazy and wild as some of these Amazonian trips. You get what you pay for.
Yeah, you'll think about that too, that you're going to go down there and fish and like jump in like a skiff, and someone's push pulling you down the river, but you get in a boat, you might be in like a shoal water center console or something, whoever, depending on who you book with.
Yeah. And I have a buddy that spent 2 months or 3 months in the Amazon. He's a PhD student at A&M, and he's studying peacock bass, and he basically, for his research, he just went down there with a guide and just caught peacock bass for a couple months. And he said it was, pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
He was with a good, lodge and a good group of people. And I'd like to do a fishing-specific trip someday and go down there and catch, Arapaima and arapaima, peacock bass. And who's that dude on YouTube? John B. Fishing, I think. Big fishing YouTuber. He went down there and caught all these other random fish. Just try to catch as many species as he could. I thought that was pretty cool. I'd like to do something like that someday.
They got a bunch of crocodiles down there?
Down there you got, in South America, there's mainly caiman, which are in the same family as alligators. They're in the alligator family. There's black caiman, which get bigger than American alligators. They can reach, 15 feet plus.
Really?
It's pretty rare.
There was a caiman species.
Yeah. Well, most people think of caiman as like the small little dwarf.
The dwarf caiman, yeah.
We did catch dwarf caiman.
I guess that's the only ones I've ever seen.
The dwarf caiman was one of my main targets for this trip, and we got one in the first night, little baby. I could not believe what I was looking at. The perfect little crocodilian. they're so prehistoric looking. It's hard to explain. The feeling I feel like when I see one.
What was the situation? Like, where did y'all find it? I mean, just
it looked like a... It was a little blackwater stream like you'd see in East Texas, just look like black tea.
Like flowing vegetation underneath or?
No, not really. It was
muddy or?
Just clear black water like you'd see on Village Creek or something.
Yeah.
Sandy. And that's where we found that first anaconda too. But, dwarf caiman, there's spectral caiman, brass snout caiman. There's a bunch of species of caiman. I think there's six species, seven species. Then there's Orinoco crocodiles, but most when you think of crocodilians in South America, you're mainly dealing with caimans, which are basically alligators. And we saw two species in Suriname. We saw the spectacle caiman, and we saw the little dwarf caiman. There's two species of dwarf caiman. We got one of them. But they're little bitty guys. We did see some bigger spectacle caiman. We tried to wade in and get them. That was one of our last nights there. We were in this. I'm right behind you there, Matthew. I'm gonna.
You grab me a beer, Matthew. Pack a good pinch.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Kind of ashamed I'm not dipping cougar right now. I went to the store and they didn't have any, but I was dipping cougar in Amazonia. I should have taken a picture.
You should have, man. Cougar, and I don't even like to advertise it anymore, but I mean, I quit dipping Copenhagen because it's so expensive.
Yeah. $7 for this can of wintergreen.
I'm not going to disclose the location for this either, but I have a gas station that gives me two cans of Cougar for $6, and you're not going to find a better deal than
luck.
That. And
good luck. I've gotten a roll for $24.
Yeah, and it's just as good, in my opinion, coming from dipping Copenhagen for 10 years.
I think the nicotine content is lower based off of how fast Copenhagen makes me shit.
Yeah. Yeah, Copenhagen.
But the taste is there. The taste is there, and it took me
a little while to get used to it. It's a different taste, but it's not bad.
Somewhere between Grizzly and Cope.
So the other day, I went into the gas station by where I work, and they had cans of Longhorn for $2 a piece.
Yeah,
Longhorn mint. So I bought every one of them they had because it was super cheap. Why not? Well, then I was like, okay, I kind of like this. After a can or two, I was like, it's pretty good. Well, I went in the store the other day, and another thing about Longhorn is they packed the cans so tight.
Dip flies out when you open it.
Every time I put a pinch in, I get dip all over me because it's just everywhere. So much dip. But to that point, I went in and Longhorn made a customer out of me then. I said, okay. So I started buying Longhorn. Well, now everywhere I go, I went in one day and they didn't have any, so I bought a can of Stoker's, and that shit was so delicious.
Stoker's is good.
Now I go looking for Stoker's, and I only buy Longhorn when I can't find it.
I used to be just straight Copenhagen, but now I'm shopping for the deals, you know. Who's going to give the best price? And Copenhagen also, they don't pack their cans full, and everyone knows that.
Oh, dude, God's Pinch is
They leave God's Pinch, but that's fine. They have superior flavor. Yeah. I guess they can do
it's
that.
It's the nicotine content that makes it good, though.
Yeah.
I've been dipping Cougar for a solid like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
This is the first can of Copenhagen I bought in a while. I only did it because they didn't have any Cougar at the store. Probably because you bought them out.
I probably did.
I'll tell you though, when you take that big pinch, man, and you can take as big a pinch as you want. You can really pull on it and just get the most out of it. At Stoker's, man, it's like tar when you spit it out, man. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Good. I like Copenhagen. I like Cougar is my number one. Copenhagen and Cougar are probably tied.
Grizzly's okay.
But if they don't have that, man, I really am just kind of stumped because all the other ones kind of suck. I will dip a Longhorn, and not a bad dip. Grizzly's not very good.
Grizzly's expensive.
And it's expensive, but they do pack their cans.
They do have a good nicotine buzz. I get a buzz off of that Grizzly.
Yeah,
but they are very expensive.
I need to return to Grizzly Mint. Grizzly Mint used to be my shit back in the day.
I dip mint, but I do catch myself if I'm having one of those days and I just go pinch after a stressful day at work, you know, and I'll put multiple pinches in, man, my heartburn will get real bad. I got to slow down. That mint will do that to you.
Yeah.
But for any of our viewers that don't dip, don't pick it up. It's a nasty habit.
I've looked at all the studies. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's all depending on how you do it and how long you do it and how big a dips you take.
Landry would like to tell all of our young viewers to go ahead and dip. I'm going to oppose that.
I'm a data-driven person. You cannot convince me that dipping is a like existential threat to your health. Because
I agree.
When's the last time you heard someone die from mouth cancer from dipping?
So
it just doesn't happen.
Knew a guy I was a kid, dude. Man. Yeah. I just knew a guy.
It's just a myth.
I'll tell you, and I won't say his name, but there was a gentleman that I knew growing up, man.
Some old fella that had been dipping.
He had a graft. They had to graft skin from his ass cheek and put it on his face because his jaw was rotten. They had to remove a piece of his jaw from his – and that doesn't factor into what I think when I take a pinch.
I believe that gentleman smoked as well, which could have contributed.
Most people that get mouth cancer, they had their smokers, dippers, drinkers.
Yeah. It's a different time back then too, man.
And back then it was probably a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad was always telling me, he's like, man, I dipped for 25 years and smoked the whole time doing it. And I was like, that's pretty rough, man. Yeah. I try to pick my poison, you know, one or the other.
If you take a couple dips a day, it's not going to kill you. No. Take care of your teeth. You know, switch sides.
Switch sides. And that's my dentist, key, the last time I went to the dentist, which I'm due to go, it's been a minute. Wow. But I didn't say anything. I went in there. I've been dipping for like several years. And he cleaned my teeth and everything. And he was like, "You're a smokeless tobacco user, aren't you?" I was like, "Yes, sir." You know, I guess he saw the gum recession.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, "All you need to do, I'm not going to tell you to quit, just switch sides occasionally. You'll be fine."
And it's nice because it's...
Because the
I
dentist...
I can make an analogy here. Yeah, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
It's like using your left hand or your right
hand. Oh, yeah. Right.
It gets... It's like... having dipped on one side for a while, it gives you like an extra buzz.
Right. And he didn't... And that's what I appreciated about this dentist. I'm not going to say his name, but he was like, "I'm not going to ask you to quit. Just, you know, occasionally switch sides. You'll be fine." I was like, "Cool." Well, so I switched sides probably once or every week. You know, I'll go... 1 week left
it's
side,
like your,
next week right
it's like
side.
Your gums are tighter on that side, too, so it presses more to you.
If you get real desperate, you go up top.
Yeah, maybe a little upper decker.
I've tried it before.
I don't go upper
It doesn't
decker.
Do good with like actual loose long cut. With pouches, it does well.
Pouch is fine.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I tried? I'm
your
ashamed.
Canines, you'll hurt. Your canines will kind of feel some pain. I did, at least.
Speaking of snooze, I'm ashamed to say I tried Zen when I was in Suriname. My buddy.
Why are you ashamed to say that, man?
I don't mind a Zen occasionally.
Zen?
But I was impressed by the amount of nicotine in those things.
They hit you.
Dude, I shit right away. That's how I measure the nicotine content. It's how fast it makes you shit.
That's
not bad. I put
one
of those, one little pouch. I was like, that ain't going to do shit for me. I need two of them.
I think...
he said, don't put two. He said, just do one.
I think it's incredible the speed in which your body adapts to those kinds of things. Because I started doing the Zens, and at first it just really hammered me. And I was like, man, I really like the buzz I'm getting off of these. And then after a couple cans, it just was nothing. It didn't really feel anything. But, hey, to bring this back full circle, because I'm curious. Now, when you went on this trip, I see you had a can of Copenhagen in your pocket. Did you bring any snuff down there with you?
I brought a full roll of Cougar.
How much did that – you brought with you? So you didn't have to buy any snuff while you're down there?
I would not have found it.
You can't find tobacco or smokeless tobacco there or cigarettes?
I went to a couple of convenience stores. They didn't have shit. I was hoping to find some, like, local snuff.
Do you think maybe it was particular to that area? Or is it, like, I'm sure South America, you know, as a whole, like, you could go and find, you know, whatever you
need. Find a hidden gem?
Yeah, I think so. There's different cultures all around the world that dip tobacco, like, chew tobacco or use tobacco. I think in South America it's in some places. And not a lot of people know this, but... chewing tobacco started in North America. Like, it was an American, Native American thing.
No kidding.
Yeah,
I did not know that. Yeah. I was just curious because I had a friend down in Mexico who called me one night and was like, "I just bought this can of Copenhagen down here. $35. He was all fired up. And
fuck that.
I was just curious. I didn't know if there was a, you know.
No, I couldn't find any. I'm glad I brought stuff there because we were going out, like, to find snakes in the Amazon, you got to go. You start at about 8 at night, and you go till sunrise.
Yeah.
It's an all-night ordeal. I pulled an all-nighter for basically 10 days straight.
No kidding.
We slept during the daytime.
So that brings up another.
I needed tobacco to get me through.
Yeah. That brings up another curiosity that I had, you know. Like, I myself, I seem to be pretty comfortable in the outdoors, and, you know, we put ourselves in really shitty situations to go in the pursuit of waterfowl and just whatever it is that we're hunting and all that. But never have I put myself in a situation where I was going to be multiple days in the outdoors in a really wild place, having to sleep out there and stay for days at a time. And I'm not a super comfortable sleeper, man. Like, when I'm at home, I like to sleep a certain way. Like, I gotta be clean. I gotta shower before bed, and I'll shower in the morning. Just, you know, a little thing of mine. But, like, I always thought that if I was to go out there, I would have to be like super tired to be able to sleep because I when I go camping, I used to camp a lot when I was a kid. I usually don't have a problem sleeping, but like to be in the jungle, you know, you can't go. I mean, could you go and wash yourself off or clean yourself or?
Yeah. We had access to showers most of the time. And yeah, you're so tired. Like you know, we're out all night hiking and you know, we usually going to bed at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. Sometimes we saw the sunrise. Sometimes I'll take like two or three showers a day.
No
like
kidding.
Just shower throughout the day to feel fresh.
Yeah.
Because you're sweating and you got bug bites all over you and shit.
It's kind of like
I will
that,
say the bugs weren't as bad as I thought they would be.
How were the mosquitoes there?
They weren't that bad. Like,
did you bring
the
like
mosquitoes
any?
in the fucking Southeast Texas marsh were a lot worse.
Really?
Dude, yeah, I don't doubt that. Tell people like all the time, mm-hmm, the Southeast Texas marsh in it's prime brutal, mosquito
teal season.
Dude, oh my gosh. Dude,
there's not another place.
Hey, you talk about
as bad.
You talk about the just the world being alive around you. That's our closest thing to it. I'm sure is standing mosquitoes in the marsh buzzing early in the morning and just hearing.
I've seen
millions of them.
That's a perfect. That sounds just like it.
That I've sat in the marsh before and just getting tore up, and then
it's
you'll
as if
see a clouds of them, yeah, at some points. Clouds of mosquitoes just migrating.
It's as if
the marsh.
The air around you is just it's vibrating.
And
just
because, yeah. I mean, when they're there, they're there. When they're not, you're good. But, man, they're bad when they're
the worst. The worst one, too, is when you're in the boat, like, and it's, you know, you're trying to cover up and keep them off of you, and you've got all of your body surface covered, and then you just hear.
Such a good.
And then you hear. And it lands on you, and then you feel it, and then you swat it, and you think you got it, and then you hear. And it takes off. It's right in your ear.
I don't know how you do that, Matthew.
That's so perfect.
It's the worst. Fucking hate the noise. That's like, yeah, almost worse than the bite. Is that
you've had
noise in your fucking ear.
And you can't get rid of them. You can't.
When we were younger, we used to go down to Texas Point and go walk into that little gym down there and, you know, try to kill a duck or two.
Brutal.
And, man, it would be like early season. We'd jump in the truck and just blast the heaters and or blast the AC and just try to blow them all out of there. But I have just stains on the roof of my truck. I'd have four guys in the back with me, and all the mosquitoes were landing on my cloth roof, and they would smash them into there and piss me off. But when we get out, I had a black truck, and they would just be layered. Like, the whole – every bit of the side of the truck was just covered in mosquitoes just landing on there. It was insane how many mosquitoes there were.
Yeah,
I don't think people understand how bad they are down here. And like you said, the Amazons, they weren't that bad. I don't know anywhere else in the world – I'm sure there are other places.
The Everglades gets pretty bad, apparently.
Pretty bad, but I think Southeast Texas ranks among the top.
It's up there. They say Alaska gets pretty bad in the summer.
I've heard that too, man, and I've heard they're big,
big, scary mosquitoes. I encountered a couple ticks. There were chiggers down there. I got a couple chiggers.
What is, for our listeners that don't know what chiggers are, in my experience growing up as a kid.
It's like a small mite.
They migrate to the scrotum.
Yeah, they're fucking terrible.
Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I don't know, but they're small little red microscopic little bugs, and they like embed into or they bite you. I don't think they actually embed into the skin, but they're a pain in the ass. I've had them so bad. The worst I've ever had them was in Oklahoma. Down here, luckily, it's so dry they're not as bad. We just don't have a lot of chiggers here. Not that I've encountered.
Growing up, I know. We had them running around the fields playing, you know.
Anywhere there's grass.
We would get them on our legs.
Get them right here in the
on our ball sack. Mm-hmm. I'd get a couple of chiggers. I mean, every time I got chiggers, they'd go up my legs and then on my scrotum.
Put that camfo on them.
Yeah, camfo finique.
They used to say you got to put clear nail polish on them to, like, smother them. But I don't think that shit works.
No, put camfo on them, it'd get them ready. I don't even know what that is.
It's a green vial. You get a little green vial called camfo. And you put that on there, cured it instantly. You wake up the next day, it was gone.
Yeah. I've had them so bad. I was out looking for snakes in Oklahoma, eastern Oklahoma, and we were hiking these glades, these grassy glades. And I got back from that trip, and my ankles were tore up, and I didn't sleep for like 2 months. I would wake up in the middle of the night fucking itching until my ankles bled. Fucking terrible. But, yeah, the bugs were not bad down there. And it may be worse during the rainy season. But
the larvae is all hatching off. And
I did get
and that's how it is down here, too. You know, we have our seasons. Yeah. Different times of year, they're worse than others.
Yeah,
bugs and mosquitoes and shit.
Yeah. And I was worried about diseases down there, and I got one shot. I wish I wouldn't have got it because nobody else got it. I got a yellow fever shot because I read somewhere that yellow fever is, like, prevalent in that area, and yellow fever can kill you, and it spreads by mosquitoes. And I was like, man, I'll take that precaution, but it was a waste of time.
Well, better be safe than sorry with that kind of shit.
Yeah, I mean, it. In some countries require it, but Suriname doesn't, so it's whatever. But, there's different diseases in the Amazon that you could get that can, you know, kill you or make you really sick, but you can, you know, there's preventative stuff. One thing I was worried about, too, was dengue, which there's not a you know, any way to prevent it. You just get it and you got to ride it out. But I did, as far as I know, I didn't get dengue. I think I would know by now. No. I did have a sore throat the whole time. I think that was just being in a, when you enter a different environment,
different climate,
there's different allergies in the air, there's different climate, there's different stuff. And so I had like a really bad sore throat and it kind of turned into a cough. But I think that's just part of traveling to different areas. It didn't, you know, it wasn't that big.
It can also stick around with you too. Like you said, you were very minimal sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah, I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. You know, I was tired the whole time. And but yeah, it was a hell of an adventure. And you know, one thing I really like what Ramsey Russell says. He says the world is a lot bigger than your own backyard, and it's true, man. The world is big. Go see it.
Yeah, and I think that too, man.
Like, I love, and it makes you appreciate home even more. Like I have a fresh perspective on what life is like here. We have an amazing life here. We got badass hunting, fishing. You know, it's very comfortable here, and we live in a wild place. You know, there's a lot of aspects. Like I said earlier, there's a lot of aspects of living in Texas that's not that much different than down there. You know, it's not as diverse. There's not as many species, but we got some wild places down here in Southeast Texas.
No mm-hmm. doubt. And I always tell people, like, if there's some shit you've always wanted to do, go do it. You know,
I can do
like
it.
With us, it's traveling and hunting.
Yep.
That's what I want to do.
Yep.
And I get to do that once a year.
Yep.
And I appreciate the shit out of it.
Yep.
I love doing it. And, you know, just get out and do shit, man.
Yeah. It's well worth it. You know, traveling around,
experience new things,
seeing different landscapes, different cultures. The cultures in Suriname were really, really fascinating to me. There's Native American culture, there's Dutch culture there, there's these Maroon tribes are, they're basically the descendants of from the slave days. They had, you know, just like, you know, here in the South, we had the Atlantic slave trade. People came over from Africa, but down there, they just escaped into the jungle and they formed into tribes, and it looks like you're in Africa half the time in Suriname. Yeah. Which was really cool. They speak, you know, African languages, and so that was pretty neat.
So you would definitely say it was worth going.
Yeah, fuck yeah. It was you know, it wasn't cheap, but it was, you know, you can always make money later.
Yeah, yeah, man.
And I don't, experiences are so valuable.
And I 100% agree with that. Experiences are valuable.
Yeah.
There are things that we've gotten to do over the past few years that I'll look back on for the rest of my life, you know, yeah. And think of, you know, man, that was awesome.
Badass, dude. Life goes by so fast.
Try to capture the moment, you know, capture some moments along the way with some pictures and some videos and, you know, look back on them, show your kids, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have a very, you know, we'll have a lot of that to show our kids, you know, like as opposed to our parents, you know, things weren't.
That's pretty cool.
What they are now. Like, we'll be able to.
Having your Instagram for 20, 30 years, and then you have, you know, your kids.
Be able to just pull out your phone and scroll down and say, hey, this was your dad whenever I was, you know, 20 years old or whatever.
Imagine seeing your dad when he was, you know, 14 years old on Instagram.
Yeah.
Videos.
It's a different time we live in for sure. Yeah. But we definitely appreciate you coming on, man, and sharing some of your stories. And Andrew also has a podcast of his own. What is the name of your podcast?
It's The Wildlife Experience. I've been slacking on it. I haven't produced a lot lately, but coming on here always gets me pumped up.
We put a little lead in his pencil. He's going to get fired up and do
some more stuff. And it's usually I'm talking to, you know, hunters, outdoorsmen, biologists, kind of across the spectrum of people that are interested in the outdoors. So yeah, definitely check it out.
I've been on there.
Yep, Matt has been on.
And you can find him on Instagram.
A lot of fun.
At the Texas Naturalist.
The
on
Texas
Instagram.
Naturalist, yep. And I'll be sharing a lot of my Suriname stuff on there. So, yeah. Thanks
really
for having me, man.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah. And look forward to probably have you again in the future on the podcast for sure. But thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you all next time.